Welcome to the mind-bending second part of our show on artificial intelligence with Professor Michael Ravatsos. We sat down with Michael to explore what seems on the surface to be a technical issue of software and hardware, but we ended up having an in-depth discussion on the human and moral issues presented by this growing new technology. Those issues are truly mind-stretching, but we will all have to come to terms with them in the very near future. Should we, for example, give an AI car the same latitude for error that we give a human driver? Getting back to something you mentioned earlier, which is self-driving cars. The idea of a self-driving car is very attractive to a lot of people. And obviously there are examples in the world at the moment, but they seem to be flawed in some way. What do you think is the problem with artificial intelligence in self-driving cars?
So one great problem, well, I actually, personally, there are lots of technical problems. I think personally, one of the biggest problems, I think, is around deployment, which is that we will not make them all self-driving at once. So it would be much easier for, you know, agreed protocols like we have, you know, the autopilot on airplanes have very hard-coded protocols of what they do in when there is a danger of collision. And they know that they can rely on that unless a human overrides, because they all use the same agreed system. Unfortunately, in traffic, it's unlikely we can make that sort of investment to swap all of the cars at once. So I think a real risk is that people will actually respond in quite unpredictable ways to the presence of those cars.
Those cars
will quite clearly behave a bit differently from human drivers. And therefore human drivers will not be trained or you know, will not have much practice in dealing with that. So I think that's one of the big problems. The other problem is that you can have, no matter how much you train them on imagery from real driving, there can always be situations that they've never encountered and that require a kind of common sense that we have. So an example is, if you're driving and in the distance, an airplane is landing on a runway, you know that that's not a threat because of the scale of that plane. It's far away. And you know that that doesn't interfere with the surface of the road you're driving on. For an AI system, that might look like something that's getting dangerously close to the road. And so it might break and it might cause a risky situation. So I think that's a danger. And related to that is also the danger that people might try to trick these algorithms into behaving in unexpected ways by creating, misleading fake visual input. You may have seen these examples where people, for example, they find ways to make themselves invisible to a face recognition algorithm by holding a particular visual pattern in front of their upper body or something like that. So I think there is that danger that, because initially I spoke about this kind of the frame within which a system has been built, and we, of course, as humans have experienced a whole range of other things unrelated to driving that tell us a lot about the world, and we understand objects, people, animals, behaviors, the weather, our physical environment in very, very broad ways. And there's something interesting around I always often think about human intelligence as not being very evolved in anything, on anything specific, unless people specialize and invest a lot of effort. But it's incredibly broad. So we are capable of dealing with lots of very, very different things. In fact, it's hard to imagine a situation where a human wouldn't know at all what to do. You know, maybe if we were suddenly in a different universe where the f laws of physics don't work, but that's very unlikely. You know, we always somehow sort ourselves out, and we have our biological needs to guide us, and to somehow deal with every situation. So I think that's really the main challenge. I anticipate, and there are already very interesting examples of this, that there will be lots of more regulated and restricted areas of application where self-driving cars will have a lot of value. I saw examples years ago in Japan, where in residential compounds where elderly people were in care homes, they already had self-driving scooters. But that was, you know, low speeds,
Yeah, of course.
closed road network.
Closed systems, yeah.
The engineers, there was only one type of vehicle. They were all the same. They could deal well enough with pedestrians, but there was nothing else could happen in those spaces. And so I can imagine, for example, or you know, I could also imagine relatively low, slow moving freight vehicles.
Yes.
I could imagine that overnight we could have special lanes on motorways where we get a lot of logistics done with
Yeah.
automated lorries, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's
But
also got to be those ethical considerations as well, which are just so difficult to even consider a machine making those choices. So, wild example, a deer runs out in front of your car, but swerving either puts yourself at risk or at risk of swerving into somebody else. And is that any different to the car detecting, say, a child running out into the road? Would the car swerve? Where in a normal human instance, your first instinct would be to not hit the child. There's so many different scenarios like that where you've got to consider, I suppose.
A moral choice, yeah.
So I mean, I think there's different levels of that. I think in the example you gave, actually, if you were taken, so I think we should the human ability to debate and consider ethical issues is very advanced. However, we acknowledge the limitations of, you know, the ability to act and think on the spot under time pressure and so on. So I think in that case with the deer and maybe, you know, an option to harm a human or an animal, if you were actually dragged in front of a judge, I think they would have quite a
Of
lot of
course.
understanding for, you know, a margin of error. And in some sense, we are not willing to grant machines a margin of error, and maybe that's appropriate because they are machines, and if we build one, we're going to build many. So we need to have thought through how they should respond to any situation. But I think it is also important to realize that there has never been a technology around which we have resolved all ethical I risks before deploying it.
Yeah, that's
And
true.
actually, where we continue to do this, so I think because there's a bit of a magic around AI, we project lots of things into it. For example, also that it could do bad things, but in fact, you know, airplanes do bad things, nuclear power plants do bad things. There is hardly an industry where we've actually sorted out all the issues, and we keep debating them.
But I think the problem there, of course, is that an aeroplane or a nuclear plant doesn't do bad things on its own volition, whereas an AI system could actually decide to do a bad thing.
Although, of course, you know, going back to the very start of our conversation, of course, that free volition we assign to humans to make them personally responsible, because we want, I mean, primarily in order to, because of the threat of punishment, because punishment is personally painful, but also because we want them to develop practices of responsibility by telling them what is right and wrong, and we want them to adjust their behavior. And I think that is actually the crucial thing. I think Because these machines don't actually have any free will. We can debate about whether humans actually have free will, but that's a different question. But I'm pretty
it's a lovely debate.
But I'm pretty certain machines don't have it. That's why I think we need to develop these mechanisms whereby those using and deploying those machines develop these, ensure these responsibility practices are embedded in how these machines function. So what I would like to see is I would like to be able to test that car and then give it feedback on what it did wrong.
Yeah.
And then all I can hope for is that, you know, there has been sufficient testing and sufficient practice, and there will still be risks. You know, we get lots of benefits from technology and we accept a lot of risk. And I think there is a little bit of a I wouldn't quite call it a crisis, but certainly a lot of nervousness and anxiety around AI and its ethics. And we sometimes overestimate our ability as a society to solve these big ethical challenges. We still haven't solved whether people should fly. We know that there's good sides to it and bad sides. We haven't solved whether, you know, nobody's seriously, I mean, maybe by their friends and family, but generally nobody's challenged when they buy a car as to the risks and harms they are causing. And we have accepted that we live with the ethical ambivalence of these technologies.
Yeah.
Because we think, also because we want to give people the liberty to use them, because they also bring a lot of benefit.
In effect, we've done a cost-benefit analysis and the benefits outweigh the costs of these technologies. Do you think that's what we should be doing with AI then, accepting the fact that it could make mistakes and it could have downsides?
Yes, I actually think the key thing that causes most concern, and that I'm certainly personally most concerned about at the moment, is that there isn't actually a culture in the tech industry to take that responsibility. I think that responsibility actually has to be taken by the human individuals and institutions and organizations that develop these technologies. So as an example, when human cloning started becoming a technical possibility, the people in that domain got together and just decided to impose a ban on themselves on doing that.
Yeah.
Because they felt that it's not the right thing to do. And I think we at the moment, the biggest challenge is that there are many new products, new technologies coming out all the time. It's very, because many of them are digital, they're extremely, it's extremely, adopting them is something that can be done very, very quickly. You know, you just release them on mobile phones and millions of people can use them instantly. So we're not going through these cycles of risk assessment and, you know, what a normal engineering discipline would be used to. You know, Rolls-Royce doesn't develop a new engine just like that and just throw it on the market. You know, there's a very heavily regimented regulatory framework around how to do that. And in fact, the companies themselves have an interest in that because they do not want to take the risks. You know, if very bad things happen, it could just mean the end for the company commercially.
Yes.
So I think that's actually currently the biggest roadblock, that in the digital world, because it's so easy to push out new things, and because governments and regulators and civil society is naturally kind of always playing catch up with the innovators. I think that's our real challenge. I think we can come up. I think we have done it in many other domains. I think certainly there will be some new challenges. I think we can come up with solutions, but I think it requires that level of dialogue and political will.
I mean, one of the things that you're making very clear, I think, is that we're in an intermediate stage where we are developing AI and we're developing the computers to on which it's founded. At what point do you think we're going to get, I don't know, say a local government, which is actually a computer doing everything?
Wow. That's a very interesting question. I thought you were going to ask whether that local government would be potentially better than a human local government.
Well, I think that's the next question. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't generally subscribe to the idea that technology should replace what humans do when there is a reason why humans do what they do. So as an example, government, many people nowadays think of government as a mechanism to run kind of the, if you like, it's a bit like the administrative office of the nation. Yeah, so it's kind of a technocratic thing. But actually the reason we want government is because we want to make it the job and the responsibility of certain people to debate and argue these things and make decisions and be accountable to us. So I think that's a function that isn't one thing. It's about is leadership, and it's about new things and about where we want to take society.
Yeah.
And I think any machine can only ever do what we tell it to do. It can't really think, it can't come up with an image of our future and what we would want. That's always and what future we want is something that we shape. So it's not, you know, we don't have an equation for it and just say, well, you know, dear computer, please achieve this, you know, please make this happen. And I think that's what humanity really is about. And ultimately, AI, I think, can be a tool for a lot of these things. So I would love our local governments to be able to use accurate, high quality information and data about what's happening in the country much better than they're able to do now. But I would want them to be the leaders, and I would want them to lead on politics like other people lead on science or religion or civic society.
One of the other things that I was talking to a friend about the other day, there was climate change, and they just threw off this statement that if AI had been around 30, 40 years ago, we'd have acted on climate change a lot sooner because it would have had all the data that we've got, but it wouldn't have had to go through the ethical and moral and political and social arguments that have delayed action on it.
So, of course, that would only be true if we allowed the AI to actually make the decisions. And again, I would say, you know, it's our purpose to sort out our future. We can imagine, I mean, there is a very simple problem to solve climate change, just eradicate humanity. but, you know, and AI could have come up with that solution. But that's not what we want, you know. It seems to be the easiest solution. It can be achieved very quickly. And, you know.
Very Terminator.
But it depends on what we are trying to achieve. We're trying to achieve survival for ourselves, and unfortunately, that requires convincing people what their survival depends on. Yeah, we need to make that happen.
Do you think that the ordinary human being will actually trust AI more than they trust human beings in the future?
I think it's possible. And I think that would be a failure of humans, because we should use the technology to make us better. And if it ends up being superior, considered superior to us, then we will have to find things to do that are meaningful, that are new. So, you know, we also trust, I do trust I do trust my spectacles more than, you know, a small child reading out the words that I can't see in the distance to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are areas of life where a tool is superior to some expectations we could have towards at least some people. But I think the greater risk is that because of the way in which AI is made to look human, we might be tempted to trust it more.
Yeah.
And we discussed that earlier about, you know, how the semblance of human-like behavior is a temptation. I would always like it to say it's AI on the tin.
Yeah, actually, yes, and announce itself. The way that AI normally works is that people tend to see it as a human being, as an android. And like all the films we've seen about androids, it gets up to nefarious activities and ends up trying to end the human race altogether. Mm-hmm. One of the programs we did recently was on quantum computing. Mm. Will quantum computing make AI more powerful, or is it nothing to do with the sort of systems that you use?
It could potentially make it much more powerful. I mean, on a very quantum computing is complicated, but at the moment, the most tangible prospect is that essentially, if you had a quantum computer, you can explore, in principle, many, many solution paths to a problem in parallel.
Yeah.
Mm.
That you know, normally a lot of these algorithms, they try to go through lots of different millions of possible solutions and find the right one. So you could do that much faster. So that is a prospect. At the moment, though, of course, quantum computing is a very, very early stage technology. I'm always very impressed when people show examples of what they could do. But I gather that at the moment, apart from the difficulty of building a quantum computer, one of the greatest challenges seems to be that it's a very odd kind of technology, in the sense that for every specific problem you're trying to solve, it's hard to anticipate whether quantum will help you.
Yes.
So you, at the moment, at least, people are really working on lots of very different things to work out whether there is a quantum advantage on every particular thing. And they're sometimes successful, sometimes there's no big advantage. Sometimes there seem to be very practical problems that it seems you solve the problem, but you can't read off the solution. So it's a very new way of thinking about computation that isn't mainstream yet and doesn't give us the sort of tools that we have with normal computers yet. But it's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, of course, it would help the self-driving car, wouldn't it? It would give it the power to look at all sorts of different options at one time in a split second and take a decision accordingly.
Well, but you would still have to tell the machine whether the deer or the baby is more important and under what circumstances.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. You know,
And this is, I mean, quite often it's very hard for humans to precisely articulate their preferences on a very concrete level. What if there was one person in the car? What if it was two? What if the driver was terminally ill? What if the deer was so big that
it would damage the car? Yeah,
it would damage, you know, you would risk there are other cars coming behind you and you might cause a mass accident. So there are all these parameters that you need to have an answer to, and we only ever ask humans for a specific situation, you know, when you have a court case or a textbook example. And I guess if we're honest, we haven't worked out, if humans had worked out what's right and wrong in what they do, the world would be a much easier place to live in.
Well, I suppose the answer is there is no right and wrong. There is only what you do at the time and what decision you take. If you swerve to avoid a lady pushing a pram across a road but hit three pregnant ladies standing on the sidewalk, that's a moral problem.
And how we learn, I think what is important about how human morality has evolved is what we learn over time about things that are generally good or bad. and that we can then roll out on a wider scale. So if you think about seatbelts, you know, that is a moral instrument to avoid accidents that at some point some people thought of on the basis of very, of course, lots of people survived without seatbelts. But people found out that too many people died and it would be relatively easy to avoid that. So I think that's actually how we advance. And again, I assume the engineers of self-driving cars will do the same. They will see patterns of something that tends to happen more often, and then they will change the behavior of that AI
to make
a positive impact.
Yeah, so self-driving cars are not really going to be possible on normal roads for a long time to come, by the sound of it.
I personally think it's still going to take a long time.
Yeah, so that has been a fantastic conversation, Michael. Thank you so much for all your time. Just as a parting comment then, I'm sure a lot of our listeners and a lot of younger generations as well will probably want to know, how can they get involved in the world of AI?
So I think there's really a lot to be gained from trying to expose yourself a little bit to the world of what I like to call computational thinking. So I think the ability to try and maybe play a little bit with, play around with a bit of programming or just understand, I think it creates so much more clarity and takes away a lot of that kind of magic that we see when we look at the products and when we look at how things are marketed. And nobody needs to become an AI developer or engineer to be able to understand these things, but there are very nice online resources and courses that you can take and where you can play around with very simple experiments, just like you learn at school in other areas. And in fact, I find it a bit sad that, you know, while biology or chemistry or physics has so many of these little experiments that everybody does at school, we don't have that sort of thing for computing or AI yet. And I really think it should be a little bit of that should be in everyone's on everyone's menu when they go through their education. But I'm sure we'll get there one day.
Michael, thank you very much indeed for your time. We've really enjoyed talking to you. In fact, we'd never stop, I don't think. But thanks very much indeed. And hopefully we'll see you again in the future.
Thank you very much for having me.